Krishna, Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna,
Hare Hare,
Hare
Hare, Hare Rama,
Hare.
Will be
transformed because our hearts need to be transformed. We all know what it's like. Living here in this material world, it is not easy. And well, we were mentioning the other day, was it yesterday? Old habits dying out. One devotee prays to Lord Krishna that as you stole the butter of the gopis, and as you stole the clothes of the young gopis, so like this, my dear Lord, please steal my heart. Please, I'm asking, I'm begging you, please steal my heart, because my heart has a problem. Actually, it has a number of problems. It just tends to get stolen by other things and become interested in other things, worldly things. And it's hard. Sometimes it's not easy because all the others I have. So my Lord, please steal my heart. Please do something. Step in and take my heart. So the more that our hearts can become inundated, saturated with these transcendental subject matters, pastimes, conceptions, ideas, philosophy, explanations, clarifications on the transcendental personalities and the subject matters, the more our hearts will change. And more our hearts change, then the more we change. And then the more our lives change for the better. And then gradually, step by step, everything becomes more and more auspicious. And even more than just auspicious, but just glorious and wonderful. Until eventually, devotees, one day we will wake up and we will no longer be in Phoenix. We will find we are in Goloka Vrindavan. This is the process of Krishna consciousness. So yes, like I said, I wanted to say a few words about, particularly about these three great transcendental personalities, beginning with Srila Prabhupada. Because if it hadn't been for Srila Prabhupada, then no matter how glorious and wonderful and supreme and just supremely merciful Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are. But, well, up until the time of Srila Prabhupada, their mercy had not penetrated to this part of the world. Rather, you know, a few people who come from India, I mean, sort of preacher, yogi types, and said a few things. But I was listening, we were listening this morning in Shishi Radha Radhanath Temple. Yes, we were listening to a class of Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada was talking about these other people who have come to the West and did some sort of yoga or some sort of someone Vedic type of thing. But Prabhupada, don't mind me saying it, Prabhupada speaks very strongly. Prabhupada said it was all useless. a useless waste of time, because they weren't giving the transcendental reality of Krishna. So, yes, Srila Prabhupada, I want to start by telling you a little story which I heard from His Grace Bhavananda Prabhu, who's very senior Prabhupada disciple and had a lot of personal association with Srila Prabhupada. He told us one time that one time he and one of a few other devotees were up on the roof of the what we call the Lotus Building in Mayapur. If you're familiar at all with Mayapur, then you would know what the Lotus Building is. It was the first building, actually, that was built. Well, there was already a sort of a hut, kind of, you know, really pretty crude type of structure out by the front gate, near the front gate. But the first like solid building, real development in Mayapur was the Lotus Building. And I remember going there the first time I went in 1976. And that's all there was. Except they were building the long building. But it was just short. It was in the sort of the middle of being constructed. So anyway, Srila Prabhupada was on top there of the Lotus Building one day with Bhagavan Prabhu and one or two or so other devotees. And they're looking out at that time. Of course, the view was unobstructed because it was the only substantial building. And Mayapur is a very beautiful scene, flat, with these tropical trees and palms and the Ganges over on one side. So it's really very nice. Even today it's really very nice, but it was even sort of more picturesque in those days. And Srila Prabhupada started talking to that little group of devotees that, look at Mayapur. It's so beautiful. It's just so wonderful. And Prabhupada said, we want the whole world to come here and see Mayapur and experience Mayapur. And Prabhupada said, but the material world, meaning the rest of, pretty much the great majority at least of the rest of the planet, Prabhupada said, this material world is so horrible, it's so terrible, but when people come here to Mayapur, then it'll really strike their hearts and make a real impact. And in this way, make an impact on the world. But then Prabhupada again said, but this material world is so horrible. It's so terrible. It's just ghastly. And then Srila Prabhupada said, I didn't want to come. But Krishna told me, you must come. They need your books. They need your books. And Prabhupada said, but I told Krishna, it's such a horrible place. It's so terrible. I don't want to go there. And Prabhupada said, but Krishna told me, you must go, because they need your books. If they don't get your books, I don't know what may happen. So that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, that's extremely interesting. In other words, Srila Prabhupada on a few occasions spoke about his background in a deeper sense his background, not just like his upbringing, family history. And Prabhupada spoke on a few occasions in terms of being sent by Krishna, coming on behalf of Krishna as a special representative of Krishna. So, Srila Prabhupada, one thing we noticed about Srila Prabhupada was that Srila Prabhupada, he didn't care about who was who in material terms. He didn't care. All he cared for, and he really cared for, was if there was some sincere interest in Krishna consciousness. And wherever that was, or even where it was just starting, then Prabhupada became very interested in that person. Extremely interested. Even if that person was, not from a Vedic or a Hindu or Indian, etc. type of background. These things hardly registered, and in many cases they just didn't register with Prabhupada when he was interacting. Whereas with so many, if not even all of his contemporaries, there was definitely, a substantial kind of consciousness of those types of things. And on that basis, a great, you could say, skepticism initially, at least for some, quite some years, a great skepticism about the Westerners. The Westerners. The Americans. Wow. And we can understand, in a sense, why the skepticism was there. Meaning, the Westerners were just in another space, culturally, spiritually, and it was really not the right place at all. And that affected these people tremendously. But it just did the thing Prabhupada. When Prabhupada came, he just started looking for people who were interested, and he started, there were people here and there for some months or so, but suddenly, after just a little while, the hippies started showing an interest. And Prabhupada just tuned in to the hippies. Even though you couldn't, you'd be hard-pressed to find sort of more polar opposites. It was extreme. You could hardly find people more different. Highly cultured person from a pure Vaishnava background, trained from practically infancy. And highly educated spiritually, and the hippies. Even now, the people you see, the Westerners you see, because the hippie movement sort of, died out to a great degree, but the Westerners now, they're nothing like the hippies. The hippies were just in another dimension. I was a bit of a hippie. Anyway, I shouldn't call it. Not full-fledged, but marginal. I could write a book, But it would be too shocking to be like it would just be your opinions of me, which is strong. But Prabhupada was like that, where there was Krishna consciousness or some interest, even just a little interest. He was there, heart and soul. And whether it was the most pakka person from a Sanatanist Hindu background, or some dregs, practically, literally from the street, he was there. He was just there, all the way. There's one very nice devotee who I am fortunate enough to get some association with from time to time, once or twice a year for some days usually. His name is Trivikram Maharaj, one of the old disciples of Prabhupada from very early days, who had a lot of association with Srila Prabhupada. And sure, we sit with him at lunchtime, breakfast at lunch, and we just ask him, get it started. And then the stories just keep coming. And every time, new stories we've never heard before. He told us one time he was in Vrindavan with Srila Prabhupada, and he was massaging Srila Prabhupada every day. And so he was getting into it. He was really getting into it. And Srila Prabhupada seemed to appreciate his massage, because he's a strong man, Srila Prabhupada. You know, we'll try to get him to come here, and you'll be amazed. He is something like between 75 and 80. Seriously. He's a little more than 75. But when he leaves here, then he dances like a man, and every time he is just wonderful. Anyway, so they're so strong. And he was messaging Prabhupada. Prabhupada liked a strong message. And Prabhupada was appreciating it. So that one day, Srila Prabhupada said, in a week, I am going to America. And Srila Prabhupada was taken aback. What's he going to do? He's got the service, he's got Prabhupada's association. So he said, oh, Srila Prabhupada, I'll have to come with you to massage you. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, it's all right. Upendra is there, another person who spent a lot of time with Prabhupada and massaged him a lot. Upendra is there. He can do. And Srila Prabhupada said, does he give a good massage to Prabhupada? And Prabhupada said, yes, quite good. So, okay. But the next day, Srila Prabhupada saw him try again. You know, Srila Prabhupada, you went to America with you guys. I really do think I should come. Because, you know, this massage is very important for you. And I think I've sort of really got the feel for it. And I think it would just be the best thing. And Prabhupada said, no, it's all right. Upendra is there. He can do it. So every day, Trivikram Maharaj tried again. Until it was the last day. Last day, and he thought, last chance, I've just got to do it. I mean, I've got to try it better. So he said, sure, Prabhupada, you're leaving tomorrow. And you know, I really think I must come with you. I really must come. Because it's so important for your health. And we want you to be in the best health like this. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, it's all right. Upendra is there. Sri Ramaraj was really pushing. But Prabhupada, does he know how to do, you know, this sort of, this and that type of message? And Prabhupada was like, it's all right, don't worry. So Sri Ramaraj basically ran out of things to say. He said, but Sri Prabhupada, is Upendra a nice boy? Is he a nice boy? And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, he's a very nice boy, but not as nice as you. And I can't tell the way Srila Prabhupada says it. And you get the idea. Then he really understood that Prabhupada loved him. Prabhupada really cared for him. There was a real relationship on the level of the heart. So, yes. So anyway, Prabhupada really, he studied Hare Krishna. Then another time, another nice story. In London, I was not there. Actually, it was before I joined. I mean, the year before I joined. And Srila Prabhupada was in the old London temple, the first London temple, the first real temple in Europe, in a place, a street called Merry Place. Actually, I joined there, but some months afterwards. So Prabhupada was staying there and giving class every day. And at the end of the class, well, in that temple, it's just a small temple room. Just a small temple room. And Srila Prabhupada's Vyasasana was right next to the altar on that side, on the other side. So Prabhupada would turn to his right and see Raghavendra Ishwara. And if he put his hand out, he'd come pretty close to just touching them because he was really, it was small. So there was Srila Prabhupada giving class, and then he concluded the class. And everyone's sitting there. And Prabhupada turned to Raghavendra Ishwara and looked at them for, you know, maybe some 15 seconds, some quite noticeable period of time. He was just looking at Raghavendra Ishwara. And then he slowly turned back to the devotees, and the devotees could see he was becoming, or had become, transcendentally emotional. And then Srila Prabhupada, he turned to the devotees and looked around at the devotees and said, I have captured Krishna, and I'm holding him here for you. Please come and take him. From time to time, Prabhupada would say some really profound things, I mean, in the sense of very intimate and deep in terms of his of relationship with the Lord, not just some philosophy or some ideas, which of course are very important, but something very personal. So yes, I'm captured Krishna, and I'm holding him here for you. Please come and take him. So it still applies. It wasn't just at that time or it's a certain particular time. It applies now, because Prabhupada is still with us transcendentally. And he still captured Krishna. I would say he is even more captured Krishna, and is holding him there for us. And we just have to come forward and take him. As Prabhupada said one time, when he was asked by a devotee, is the spiritual master in the disciples' house? And Srila Prabhupada answered, yes, if you will let me enter. So in other words, it's not that he has to do something more dramatic or forceful or whatever, but it's really up to us to open our hearts. Yeah, to open our hearts. Well, do you know that song of George Harrison? My sweet woman, just open up. Oh no, is it that one? Oh no, it's another one. I should bring up George Harrison, should I? But Prabhupada said, interesting little historical point. I was told from Puri Janpuru, if you've heard of Puri Janpuru, very authoritative and extremely senior and advanced and responsible devotee. He said, I was told he said at least, that Prabhupada said about that song, My Sweet Lord, Prabhupada said, it is a song in separation from Krishna, in the mood of Sanatana Goswami. Holy Paul. Because he knows Sanatana Goswami. He's deep. So, yes, so Prabhupada came and captured Krishna. He had captured Krishna, he's holding, and he was giving us Krishna, and he's still giving us Krishna, and giving us Lord Chaitanya. Giving us Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya, of course, is Mahavaidya Avatar, the most merciful sort of munificent avatar, Vadanga. And Lord Chaitanya, when he was present 500 or so years ago, Lord Chaitanya, you know, he spent the first 24 years of his time in Navadvipa area. Then he took sannyas, and then he went to Puri, and then he went shortly after he went into South India for 6 years, and then came back and stayed for the remaining 18 years in Puri, most of the time, visited Vrindavan for a bit. So Lord Chaitanya, this mood of Srila Prabhupada's, he really got from Lord Chaitanya. You know, other people, his contemporaries, we don't want to necessarily start making big issues, but still it's a fact that Srila Prabhupada really captured the mood of Lord Chaitanya, which we see in different of the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. For example, who is it? It's Jagannanda Pandit, one of the greatest associates of Lord Chaitanya. He explains how Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda and he himself and various other associates would move around the Navadvipa area every day, having Harinam. So one day they came to a particular little small area on what is called Godrun Dwi. Godrun Dwi is one of the nine islands of the Dwi. And it's just across the Jalapi River on the northeastern side of the Ganges. And so they're living around the mountain, having this big happy now. And for hours, and it was coming into the middle of the day, and they decided to take a little break. Prabhupada actually described that Krishna consciousness is so nice. You just chant Hare Krishna, and when you get a little tired, read a book. And when you get a little tired, take some prasadam. And when you get a little tired, take a little rest. And then get up and chant again. And it's like cyclical. You carry on like that. So Lord Chaitanya and his associates, they took a little rest there in Godrun Dwi. So they're there having a little break, and some cowherds, local cowherds, approached Lord Chaitanya. And one of the cowherds, his name was, what was his name? Beam, the first one. His name was Beam. Beam Gwal. Gwal being cowherd. And so Beam Gwal, he recognized Lord Chaitanya and said, "Oh, my mother took your mother as if she was her," who could remind me? Anyway, one relative. Yeah, one close family, but they were close before. Yes. So therefore you, what was it now? Like her sister, my mother took your mother like her sister. Is it? Anyway, as I recall, Lord Chaitanya ended up being like the uncle. So maybe she took Mother Sachi as aunt, perhaps. So Lord Chaitanya ended up as like an uncle and said, "You must come to our place, and we will feed you, all of you. We will feed you. Please come. We'll prepare a nice feast." So Lord Chaitanya and his associates went to their place, and sure enough, the mother prepared, you know, without having to go to the checkers to get TV dinners or, you know, boil up some canned beans, baked beans. She just whipped up a bridge rasi style feast in about half an hour for this whole group. If you're familiar with bridge rasi style, then you would know it means, if it's paka, there's paka and kacha style. Kacha not necessarily meaning like bad, but just better class and, you know, kind of, it's okay, class. Paka class means puri. Did you know that? Kacha class means roti. Or chapati, more specifically. Yeah, chapati. So, So Paka style, Puri, and Brijvasi style, you know what that means? Potato, yeah, alu. Alu Sanchi, dry Alu Sanchi, and various other things is Brijvasi style. And sweets like, well, Sonapapri, and various other things. We will not disturb you with too much of that sort of culinary analysis. But let's just say, she whipped up a great feast in about half an hour for this whole group, including Pakori. Are you familiar with Pakori? I know you've heard of Pakora. Am I right? You've heard of Pakora. Who has not in the New Jagannath Puri temple? Who has not had a brinjal pakora? This now is Pakori. Pakori. I will not disturb your minds by describing it in detail, but let us just say, if you have not experienced it, you've wasted at least 10% of your life. So they all had a feast, and it was just great. Everything was great, and they're ready to go out again chanting on Harinam. When one other cowherd named Ram, he approached, and he was very disturbed. He was very disturbed, and he told Lord Chaitanya, you know, that there's a river nearby, just there, basically. But there's a crocodile in it, and therefore the cows cannot drink water from it. And look at the cows. Look at the cows. The cows. Look at the cows. They're very skinny because they're not drinking water enough. That's very bad. Can you do something about the crocodile? And Lord Chaitanya immediately just stood up, walked down to this river or lake or river, body of water, and he came and started approaching, going down to the, shall we say, lake. And the crocodile came up out of the river and started approaching Lord Chaitanya as Lord Chaitanya approached him. And you know, crocodiles, they're pretty mean looking. Yeah. We were out in Richardsdale a while ago. We went to one little quiet spot, and what did we see? Signs. Beware of the crocodiles. We were in Siberia many years ago at this lake Baikal. It's one of the wonders of the world. It's an amazing, massive lake. And we went for a walk along the side of the lake for a couple of kilometers. And suddenly we met a man with a rifle. And he's looking around very intently. You know, like he's really looking for something to shoot. And we asked him, what are you hunting? He said, bears. We got out there. All right. Anyway, is everyone's watching the crocodile and Lord Chaitanya? And what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And Lord Chaitanya was now just practically right in front of him. And the crocodile opened his mouth and lifted his head, and everyone was like, what is happening? onto the ground. And Lord Chaitanya put his foot on the crocodile's head. And the crocodile transformed into a, like a young demigod, Deva Kumar. And it's a bit of a long story. But he had offended Devasa Muni. You know, offending Devasa Muni is a major no-no. We do this seminar on the demons in Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, and you must know about half of them became demons because they were cursed by Devasa Muni. He is what we call a serial curser. You know what? You're going to really watch out. So my point though is, of course, it's just a nice pastime describing a great devotee. I mean, Jagannatha Mandir. But it shows, it illustrates the point that Lord Chaitanya, of course, he's known as Patitapava, the deliverer of the fallen. And when you get down to the crocodile level, then you're really talking about fallen. Really talking about fallen. Not even a human species, a very aggressive, carnivorous creature. But Lord Chaitanya took the trouble to deliver him. And Srila Prabhupada reflected that word, as we were saying earlier. Well, we already talked about that earlier. So, and as a result of that, all the devotees were very, I mean, all of his associates, and now also, all the associates were very, very attached to Lord Chaitanya. There's one nice story I wanted to just, where is it? There it is. It's a very nice story. It's in Chaitanya Charitamrita. You can find it there somewhere. It's a story about this. It's a story about Jagannatha Mandir. Actually, this close associate of Lord Chaitanya with Siddhartha Goswami. Siddhartha Goswami had been sent by Lord Chaitanya to Vrindavan to do research, to write, to locate pastime places, sacred places. And Jagannatha Pandit, he went to visit there. And when he went to visit, actually Lord Chaitanya told him, stay with Siddhartha Goswami. Because he is sort of, you could say, he is one of us. Don't mix too closely with the locals. Of course, the locals now are not like the locals in those days. And let's not get into that too much. But they tend to be in a different space, a different type of consciousness. You know, if you want to get confused in Vrindavan, just have a local bridge busy take you on Parikrama and explain the different places. And there's a great likelihood you'll become confused because, they've got some different ideas. So that's what Lord Chaitanya said. Don't mix with them. Stay with Siddhartha Goswami because he is one of us. So, Jagannatha Pandit did that. And he was staying with Siddhartha Goswami. And one day he noticed Then Sunakura's swami head wrapped around his head, sort of like a half turban type of thing, not like a full turban, but something around his head. A red cloth, and Jagannatha Pandit, he assumed it was Maha from Lord Chaitanya, because the sannyasis, anyway, he just assumed that. But as things happened, Jagannatha Pandit asked him, "This is from Lord Chaitanya." And Sadhguru Swami said, "No, it's not actually. It's from another devotee, a person named Mukunda Saraswati, who was, you know, sort of somewhat prominent devotee in those days. Yeah, he gave it to me." So, Jagannatha Pandit, when he heard that, "You are accepting remnants from someone other than our Lord Chaitanya," he got really disturbed, and he picked up a pot, and he was going to hit Sanatana Goswami to punish him, because he felt this is wrong. And he actually says, Jagannatha Pandit, in that same book where the crocodile story is, Prema Vimarata, he says, "I shall beat with a stick that person who offers respect to some other sannyasi, neglecting Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I shall put fire to the mouth of the person who discusses frivolous and mundane topics like Bollywood." Frivolous and mundane topics, avoiding the nectarian pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So my point was, there, the sort of basic point, that Lord Chaitanya, his nature was such, his loving dealings, very, not just friendly dealings, but very affectionate dealings with all the devotees, endeared him so much to everyone. That here's Jagannatha Pandit, you know, a prominent associate, and he feels so strongly that we must focus on Lord Chaitanya and not get sidetracked. So, he didn't hit him, by the way, but he almost hit him. So therefore, you know, because in our association with Srila Prabhupada, we experience the same thing. You know, just this idea that we mentioned of not discriminating in the negative sense of the term. Who is a proper recipient or not, or who is a nice person or not, just looking for where there's interest, even if it was from some really low person by material standards. Prabhupada was like that. Prabhupada, his humility and broad-mindedness were just completely amazing, very amazing. One time you may have read that Srila Prabhupada was leaving some city, flying important. There are many devotees gathered, and devotees being devotees, they were just blocking the whole airport. In reaction, say devotees being devotees. You know, we have experience. Devotees like to drive in the right-hand lane on the highway. Yeah, when there's nobody to pass. When you see a devotee driving in the right and the outside lane, you know, this is a real devotee. So, yes. So anyway, yeah, in the airport it's crowded and Prabhupada's sitting and some devotees are gathered and just all the devotees just all over the place. And one official came and complained. So the Rupa Lunga Guru, actually, who was the GBC at the time of that area, he stood up on one of the seats and he made an announcement to all the devotees. There's at least 100 devotees. And he announced, "Will all devotees please move to the right-hand side?" Over to that side. And Prabhupada was on the left-hand side. So sort of get them away from Prabhupada. Okay, so there he is. Yes, he made his announcement. Okay, move over. And you too, move over. Sort of managing the situation a bit. Then he turned back to the left to see Prabhupada. Prabhupada was not there. So what happened? Where's Prabhupada? And he moved over to the right where all the devotees were. And Prabhupada moved over to the right, feeling he's one of the devotees. Will all the devotees move to the right? Yeah. So Prabhupada endeared himself to the devotees by things like that and just so many things. One interesting little story. There was a devotee named Jayagopal, disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And unfortunately, Jayagopal was in a car accident and left his body. And he was a householder, a young man, with a young wife. And now he's gone. And of course the wife was deeply affected by that. So she had a darshan with Srila Prabhupada, in which Prabhupada consoled her and preached to her. And Srila Prabhupada said, "I think he has gone back to Godhead," which was very, you know, despite everything, it kind of pacified her to some degree. So then she came out, and one of the devotees who'd been in the room came out with her and said, you know, "I think Prabhupada just said that, just to, you know, to make you feel good." And which disturbed her again. Yeah, like Prabhupada's just being sort of diplomatic. So she'd been feeling better, but now she felt worse again. But then not long after that, she read a book which had been done, actually had been produced by Dhanadeva Goswami, who some of you might have heard of, about Prabhupada, things to do with Prabhupada. And in that book, so she read that book just a few months later, and then she found that Prabhupada had written about Jayagopal. and Omnam Prabhupada, Dhananjaya Goswami, had written about Jayagopal and had written about a conversation he had had with Srila Prabhupada about Jayagopal and his passing away. And he said that Srila Prabhupada told me that with Jayagopal, he was not really qualified, but Krishna made an exception for him and let him go back to Godhead. And again she felt, you know, much more pacified and satisfied. So like this, Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada was not a person who just sort of emotionally pacified people and that way they would appreciate him. But operating on a very deep personal level, he would really touch, I mean, deep personal transcendental level, he touched the hearts of so many, so many. Giriraj Maharaj, he told us,
I'm sure your
Maharaj is familiar with this, his parents, Giriraj Maharaj's parents, came to Bombay to spend some time with him. You know the story, don't you? And they were not very pleased at all that Giriraj Maharaj was a devotee. In fact, the father particularly was really opposed and offered him, if I remember correctly, $1 million cash. I'll just give it to you. Just leave the Hare Krishna movement. So they came over and they spent some time with Giriraj Maharaj. And then they spent a little time, some time with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada dealt with them in such ways that even though, you know, first of all, they're just, you know, very materialistic, older Americans. And secondly, there's this negativity in their minds, particularly the father. But Prabhupada dealt with them so nicely that at the end they were like friends. They would just have a really warm relationship. And then they left. And when they went out of the room, Giriraj Maharaj spoke to Prabhupada and said, "Shri Prabhupada, it's amazing. Everyone loves you." And Prabhupada replied, "Yes, because I love everyone." I got the right hand. I think I got it right. I heard him tell that on a number of occasions. Yeah, so one devotee told us about a dream he had. He dreamed that he died. Hare Bol. And he went back, sort of, to Godhead, but not quite. He ended up at the entrance. He ended up at the entrance, and there was some security man or whatever. Someone who checks your CV. And should he check your credentials to see if you really should go in? So he asked him, "What's your name?" And the Lord devotee told him his name. And the person said, "Who? Who?" And the devotee told him his name again. And the man on the gate said, "Who? I never heard of you." And the Lord said, "But I am a disciple of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada." And the man on the gate said, "Really? Oh, well, come in then." And he is, he's welcome. Roll down the red carpet. Well, you know, we could go on forever, well, not forever, but for quite some time. We could go until tomorrow morning at least. But what do we need to do? 10, yeah? Does that change? Let me tell you one or two more stories. Is that okay?
Yes.
Is that all right?
Okay. Are you familiar with all these stories? Anyway, it doesn't matter. Prabhupada said, repetition of a good thing is good. So even if you've heard my stories 100 times, don't stress. It's good. I'm going to tell you a Prasadam story. Don't worry. Prasadam will be there. Am I right? We'll see. But I'm going to predict the future. I'm seeing the future. Ah, there will be Prasadam. Just see if my prediction comes true. So there's one devotee, he's really nice. He is really nice. And he's one of the old devotees, old disciples of Prabhupada, who I was fortunate enough to have, I mean, from time to time, some association. His name is Tejas Prabhu. You met Tejas? Yeah, Tejas Prabhu. And he got a lot of association with Srila Prabhupada. You know, let me tell you first, before I go into the Prasadam story, one thing he told us, which is just, it's kind of super extraordinary. Try to follow this if you can. He was temple president in Delhi, ISKCON Delhi. And Prabhupada would come and do programs around visiting people's houses, house programs. And Tejas would go, because he's the president, and Prabhupada would usually introduce him. This is our Tejas Das. He is our president here. So he was with Prabhupada at one man, one family's house, and Prabhupada introduced him. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, this is Tejas Das. He is our president here in Delhi. And he has very big ears, and he is very intelligent. Anyway, digest that one. It seems big ears, maybe a sign of intelligence, I don't know. But anyway, he told us that story. But the Prasadam story, a Prasadam story. You know, ISKCON Delhi in those days, nowadays there's big temple, there's several big temples around Delhi. It's just really quite something. In those days, ISKCON Delhi was a flat, like a small, you know, Indian style, small 2 or 3 bedroom flat. And the temple room was half the size or less than half the size of one of these cabinets. It was small. It really was. And he was the president. But there were very few devotees because it's so small. And one day, Prabhupada's cook became sick. And somehow, Prabhupada chose Tejas to ask, could you cook for me? So Srila Prabhupada called Tejas and asked him, can you cook upma? Upma. It's sort of, what is it? It's Tamil, isn't it? Or is it Telugu? Or is it just... it's kind of the South Indian. I mean, real open. Can you cook open? Tejas, you know, he was a bit of a cook, but he didn't want to say, sure, no problem. So he said, somewhat. He's a really conservative person, plays things close to the chest. So he said, somewhat. And Rabbi said, well, my cook is sick. Please cook upma for me for lunch. Yes, Shubhama. He didn't actually really know how to cook upma, although it's pretty simple. So what he did, around the corner, just a couple of 100 meters away, there was a super duper, 7-star. Can you imagine? You've heard of 5-star. This was a 7-star, very traditional paka. Indian, no onions, no garlic, vegetarian restaurant. Like, should Vaishnav. Even sometimes, should Vaishnav has onions and garlic, but it's been instructed. Not just should Shakahari, but should Vaishnav Shakahari. So it's like this high class vegetarian, traditional vegetarianism. So he went there and found the chief cook and got a recipe for 7-star upma. Just the most super duper upma that you can't even imagine, actually, because it's really just from another dimension of traditional Indian cooking. And he cooked it for Prabhupada. And it was this type of recipe. You know, you've seen, haven't you? I know you've seen, I've seen. Our meal preparation sometimes. And you leave it for a little while, and on the top, you get, you know, a centimeter of oil. And you anyway, I think you know what I mean, don't you? Since they got carried away with the, I wouldn't say oil. So this is what it was like. It was just super rich. Too rich. And with strong spicing and sugar. You know what the Prabhupada said? If you put enough butter and enough sugar, any fool can cook something and it will taste nice. That's my secret when I cook. Sugar and everything. Okay, so he did this. A whole pot of it. Just upma. Only upma. And then he served Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada, when he would eat lunch or anything, he would eat something. He wouldn't eat the whole whatever was on the plate. It was at least unusual, even rare, that he would have seconds of anything. So he'd eat some part of it, and that would be that. This day, Prabhupada ate all of it. And then he said, is there more? So Tejas gave him another, you know, healthy plate of upma. Oozing ghee. Not oil either. But real ghee. And so Prabhupada started eating. And you know what happened? He ate it all. Wow. And then he asked, is there more? Yes. And Tejas gave them everything. Just whatever was left. And Prabhupada ate all of it. Thirds. and didn't make any comment. So then the next day, Prabhupada did not get up early, as he would normally do. But he got up in time to go for his morning walk. I don't know, maybe 6 o'clock or whatever. And he went for his morning walk, and I'm sure you've heard, when Prabhupada went for morning walks, he walked briskly. He really walked. It was exercise. It was not a stroll. It was like real serious exercise. But not this day. He was walking very slowly. And he walked a bit. And after some, however long, he stopped, as he would do. From time to time on morning walks, Prabhupada would stop and make some comment about something, philosophical, some Krishna conscious comment. So he stopped and he turned. A Tejas was there and a few sannyasis and other senior devotees, a group of several devotees. So Prabhupada stopped and turned to the group. Tejas was a little to the side, sort of behind. And Prabhupada said, that boy who cooked the upma, he tried to poison me. And everyone was shocked. And they looked at Tejas, who was shocked. Poison, what is this? Prabhupada said, yes. The upma was so nice, I ate too much. And now my stomach is upset. It's a devotee. Like the cockroach. Which reminds me of another story. But I've told you all this story. But let me tell you again. And then we'll have Maharaj say something. We had just moved into Bhaktivedanta now. 73. It's kind of like May, probably May. I was in the central, very place, central city, the original temple in the center of London. But we'd come out regularly for the morning class. So one day we were there for morning class. And at the end of the class, the temple president from Edinburgh, Scotland, asked Prabhupada a question. Should Prabhupada, in our temple in Edinburgh, there are many rabbits. Is it all right if we kill the rabbits? And Srila Prabhupada's answer was, if you kill the rabbits, you should be killed. And I was there, and I heard this, and I thought, wow, that is radical. And the temple president from Edinburgh heard it, but he didn't catch it. And he said, but Srila Prabhupada, it's an old building. There are many rats, and they could be dangerous and carry disease, and sometimes they bite. And so Srila Prabhupada, is it all right if we kill the rats? And Prabhupada answered, if you kill the rats, you should be killed. Same answer. So there, in Bhaktivedanta Manor, we had no rats. Why? Because the mice had overwhelmed the rats and killed them all. You didn't get that, did you? There were so many mice. There were so many mice, you wouldn't believe it. It was just amazing. So the rats couldn't make it. So we asked, some devotees asked Prabhupada what to do about the mice. And Prabhupada said, just keep the place clean. They are not here for the association. They are here for food. So if you keep it clean, and there's nothing for them to eat, they will go away. So we organized a team like four devotees. And that was all they did. They cleaned back to Banner, which was a big place. So it took a couple of hours to clean the whole building. And when they finished, they cleaned it again. And when they finished again, they cleaned it again, like at least three times a day. The whole building was clean, spotless, beyond spotless. But you know what? The mice stayed. Their favorite thing was, during Mongol Arati, they would dance on the altar. And I remember offering Mongol Arati on a number of occasions. And then they dance on the altar and have to chase them away and come back and then again continue offering whatever you're offering. But they would be back. By the time you turned the Agadati one time, they were back. Like four or five of them. It was incredible. But we knew we couldn't kill them. So what to do? And we just couldn't imagine how to make the place any cleaner. It was just beyond comprehension. So what we did, one devotee got brilliant inspiration from God. We got a cat. And we named her, it was a female, we named her Nrisinga Devi. And in a few days, we didn't see any mice. But Nrisinga Devi, she was becoming, as we said, Chetsu, quite healthy. And her descendants, the descendants of Nrisinga Devi, are still in Bhaktivedanta Manor. Here we go, they will see. Here we go, they will be odd careful. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Gopinanda ki jai. So we have number two.
Thank you. 80% and that's it. Then they said, Jai. And they were like more enthusiastic. And finally, Srila Prabhupada said, yes, if you are 75% Krishna conscious, then you'll go back to Kali. So, again, they were very enthusiastic. And finally, Srila Prabhupada brought it down to 70% Krishna conscious. And if you're just 70% Krishna conscious, then Prabhupada himself said, I will come and take you back to Kali. And everyone said, famous, Hari Bol. Everyone? Hari Bol!
Hari Bol!
So then later on, this was quite amazing that Prabhupada can make such an adjustment. Amazing to this. So then he concluded, when he gave this lecture in Mayapur, that Srila Prabhupada did mention that usually in order to be qualified, you have to go to the front door. And he mentioned that Srila Prabhupada said that because I have the back door key, in the front door people will see you going in, but when you go to the back door, but anyone will see you going in, so therefore. So it's an amazing thing that Srila Prabhupada has sought the back door key to Goloka Vrindavan. And this is important because this is in relationship to, you know, being an ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada is our founder chari, at the same time father of grandfather of everyone. It's quite amazing that Srila Prabhupada can make such an adjustment for us to go back home. So that indicates, you know, no matter what happens, and I never leave this country. It's probably his death was in that way. And then another time, there's one of the earlier devotees who joined in the UK. The Maharaj obviously knows him very well also. His name is Dhananjay. So, Srila Prabhupada had another early disciple, and prior to becoming a disciple in Hawaii, his name was Sai, S-A-I. But he was an American citizen. So somehow Sai had some, you could say, punya, or good qualities in terms of piety. And he was preaching to people, and he had a number of followers in Hawaii. At the same time, he came across Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, and then he used Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, and then preached to people, and he got even more followers. So eventually, Srila Prabhupada met with him, and he was initiated as a sinner of Prabhu. And he used to send, you know, in batches, groups, his followers from Hawaii for them to be initiated by Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles. So, and Srila Prabhupada was very impressed with him, and Srila Prabhupada was also very close to him, and he was very close to Srila Prabhupada, to the extent that Srila Prabhupada gave him first initiation, second initiation, and later he initiated him into sannyas as Sena Sukhupananda Swami. Now, you know, then something happened. And, you know, because, you know, he came with that kind of sort of leadership situation where he already had followers, and then those followers were in generation of Prabhupada. So whoever was the GPC for Hawaii, he sort of ran into difficulties in that relationship because he felt that he was influencing them and more, and he should be in charge. But Srila Prabhupada had another person in the GPC there. So eventually he requested permission of Prabhupada in Mayapur, in the Mayapur meetings and the Mayapur Gopurnima festival. Yeah. So, and he himself felt that he was fully representing Srila Prabhupada. So, when he mentioned to Srila Prabhupada something like, I cannot stand your ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada, like that, means the leadership. Especially others who were responsible for Srila Prabhupada's preaching in the area. And then Srila Prabhupada was taken aback. Then he said, Srila Prabhupada, I will always remain faithful to you. Always remain faithful. And that's when Srila Prabhupada said something like this. That ISKCON and myself are non-different. ISKCON for us, that means Srila Prabhupada. So later on, probably about 20 years ago, so after Srila Prabhupada's manifest passed, I'm pretty sure of this instruction for his followers and our ways. Dhananjaya Prabhupada met Sri Swarupananda Swami in Hawaii. By this time, he had his own institution, so he branches everywhere, some of the years and so forth. He's not part of his family today. So, when Dhananjaya Prabhu and his wife met Sri Swarupananda Swami in Hawaii, and they were quite amazed at what's going on here, because he was relating this whole thing. In his interaction with Srila Prabhupada in that specific time in Mayapur. Then he said, I will follow you, but I will not follow the leaders of ISKCON. And then he said, Prabhupada told me this. ISKCON and me and myself are not different. So we can see that practically all of us have accepted the direct disciple of Srila Prabhupada. We didn't really have direct association with Srila Prabhupada. But if we remain in this common and remain faithful to the senior devotees who guide us along in the relationship with Srila Prabhupada, then it's good as a meeting with Srila Prabhupada. It's the same. Maybe different and not different. Chitya Bhena, a very different. Another time, Tamakrishna Goswami, of course, he had a unique relationship with Srila Prabhupada because he was very fearless and very bold. Even with Srila Prabhupada, he was respectful, but his nature was like that. So, what did Tamakrishna Goswami told Srila Prabhupada, so straight. He said, Srila Prabhupada, I thought you said that Krishna consciousness was easy. Srila Prabhupada was also very firm with him. And he said, I never said that. And he paused, and then Srila Prabhupada said, I said that Krishna consciousness is simple. Srila Prabhupada was on a morning walk in a place in Nello in June of 1976. Nello is a small city in Andhra Pradesh, Telugu speaking state. And you get Tirupati Balaji in that state, Hyderabad is the capital. But I think now they divided into two states. So on that morning walk, several devotees wrote Srila Prabhupada, and one devotee's name is Baba Bhuti. And there was like some kind of controversy around Srila Prabhupada from outside of ISKCON. We don't want to get too much into it. then Lord Buddha Prabhupada and Lord Toshima Prabhupada, they said, they said that if Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted Krishna consciousness in the Western countries, then why didn't Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu go there himself and bring it? They said. Prabhupada answered, there is dear disciple Prabhupada. He said, don't you know that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left the credit for me? And a very nice that the credit for me. And every time they go in law, they go in chin, down, say, Jai, Haribo. Come on, everyone. Jai.
Because Shri Prabhupada used to offer
you want to get the blessing of love of Radha and Krishna, you first have to receive the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And if you want to receive the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, you have to receive the mercy of Lord Nityananda. And then they asked him that in order to receive the mercy of Lord Nityananda, what should we do? And Srila Prabhupada said, you should go and preach to people who are like Jagai and Madan. So we can really see that, Lord Nityananda, he liberated this one, who went Jagai and Madan. But then Srila Prabhupada is liberated, apparently, not within his plan for a moment, many years and billions of Jagais and Madans. So it's definitely, he's composed of the unlimited mercy of Nityananda. Then in Srila Prabhupada's final days in Vrindavan, it's quite an amazing exchange. Really, everyone did want Prabhupada to leave. It's clear, it's just normal and natural. The people of Prabhupada. So they'll do anything and they'll say anything to Srila Prabhupada just to help them to leave. Just say anything out of great desperation. So one like, not a leading disciple, it's like an innocent, naive disciple, in that sense. The boys were a few years ago, some of them. So, he approached Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada sort of had a senior disciple around him. The Prabhupada was not dead. Was like in the numbers for you. And we know that Prabhupada couldn't do anything, and he was just like practically bones, in the external sense of bones. And even to speak, it was just like murmurs, just to speak. So one of the leading disciples motioned to Srila Prabhupada that this disciple was to speak with him. And at that time, I think Srila Prabhupada indicated to the leaders, let everyone come. Whoever wants to come, let them come. From all over the world. So there was one particular disciple. He took that advantage and he was speaking to Srila Prabhupada. They didn't know what he was saying. So when Srila Prabhupada, when he came close to Srila Prabhupada, so Srila Prabhupada can't speak, and he just needs something. So he means, okay, you can start speaking. Words are going to be fine. So the disciple, probably the great disciple, is in desperation. And he said that Srila Prabhupada, maybe I'll also say that now before I say this, but when Prabhupada was speaking earlier, he said that. We saw Srila Prabhupada here on December 31st, which is the anniversary today. And in that particular year, in 1936 into 1937, is the actual time also when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur left this planet just after midnight of 31st and up to 1st January. 36 or 37?
36 and
37. Yeah, 36 and 37. So the last day of 1936, 31st December, into the 1st January of 1937, after midnight, at about 5:30 in the morning, if I remember correctly, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also went to his manifest past death, sort of left his world. And then in this anniversary, Prabhupada came. Pakistan, into that. So this is kind of connected to what I'm about to say. So this disciple, he tortured Prabhupada in desperation, don't leave us. He said that, Srila Prabhupada, you said that your Guru Maharaj was so disgusted with his leading disciples that he decided to leave early. Prabhupada said something to that effect. Then the next thing he wants to ask the question to Srila Prabhupada, he was hesitating. And Srila Prabhupada motioned him. Yet Prabhupada did say that. And he said these words, which was very heavy. He said, is this the same of you now? And that should be. So indicating you, you're leaving us because you're unhappy with us. Same thing. Yeah. And Srila Prabhupada said, I remember before this, he was not even following words, Prabhupada, very open, so that spiritual energy that is naturally composed. He said, no! He made it, no! And then Srila Prabhupada said these words. He said, if Krishna allows, I'll be the most happy to stay in your company. In fact, all of you, that means my disciples, all of you are the best association. Quite amazing. So we should be very careful, including myself. It would be a little sad thing for us in this world, if we hear this is the last son of Shiva, disciple of Shiva Prabhupada, leaving us. It's not really like that. It's just time passes, time takes things. It's quite amazing.
Towering over the show, I would like. He was always famous.
is like that. It's very bold, very kind of outspoken. And he's one of those sannyasis given up to today. And Maharaj was saying he's probably an overload of sannyasis. But he's so energetic and kirtan, it's amazing. And always follows the sandwich program, morning program, and he must attend every evening the Govardhana program, you know? He lead it, he must attend. Yeah. So when Maharaj is speaking about him, and they call him Tejas Prabhu, I also have, I mean, he's an amazing poet. Tejas Prabhu can speak full Telugu. He was staying there, under the traditional language. And he was the first president of the Delhi Assembly. So Maharaj was saying that it's not just and that like struck me very deeply when he was speaking. It's not just like pressure power as a farmer child. It's a very deep personal relationship. All of these stories, including like Gira Swami's parents. Very quick, you know, you can have that very deep relationship. You know, personal, very personal. Like our in a proper, I'm just recording the prophet. Like Prabhupada said he's almost ready to have something. Maturity of Sangha said he's a very really nice boy. So yes, he's a nice boy. But God is nice as you. So it's very, very close. It's simple, but it's just amazing how personal she recognizes. So I was explaining one time in my Sunday class yesterday, and then we went into the book distribution Srila Prabhupada did explain even to his disciples in various instances. And then I was thinking, where's the proof for this? And actually there's proof. That if you look at all of Srila Prabhupada's letters to his disciples in the Vedas, you will find practically most of his letters, Srila Prabhupada's letters. Very few letters he may write my dear disciple, but most of his letters write, you know, my dear wonderful sons and daughters. My dear sincere sons and daughters. You read that. So he's more than a farmer, child. He's so personal, his son. You know, he's more than that. He's just a father. And your father and mother and everything put together for us. So there's one such exchange like that. And this is a because institutionally they can found a child, which is great, because the members make up the institution. But on a personal level, it's just like father. They will never reject any son or daughter. And so forth. And in the same way, you know, he's a sincere father, and disciples are continuing that. That same magnanimity, that same beneficence of Srila Prabhupada is coming out through that. So in this one particular conversation, one of his, everyone is significant, but she's not like a leader in the school. And her name is Bhakti Devi, yes. So she asked Srila Prabhupada in a very, very innocent way. Very innocent. And why is it innocent? Because I could speak for my own personal self. And, before joining ISKCON, like some 35 years ago, you know, we knew Mahabharat. We knew Ramayana. And I knew, you know, like Swami Shivananda's Bhagavad Gita, that the Divine Law Society Prince. I knew that in and out. So we knew these things. Really speaking, we didn't know. We were like misled, we misunderstood, and thought we knew proud, puffed up, coming from Indian culture, all that stuff. And so put up. But when, as soon as we came, I came in contact with Prabhupada, I spoke Stephanie from history. I really don't know this question. It's clear. For me, it is personal. Yeah. But at least I have come to know a little bit about Sri Prabhupada. So in the same sort of mood, this disciple of Sri Prabhupada, in this group conversation of 4 July 1972, in the same mood, she is also feeling that she knows Sri Prabhupada, but she doesn't know Krishna. Doesn't know Krishna. So in a very innocent way, very, very, very innocent way, you know, she's asking Srila Prabhupada this question. And she asks, in a very innocent way, like a little daughter, you know, a little daughter. Have you seen Krishna? She asks, have you seen Krishna? But remember, it's not that she's not convinced, but it's just, have you seen Krishna? And Prabhupada answers in one word, yes. And then in a very innocent way, like a little girl to the father, you know, she asks, you have? And making a shot, you have? And Srila Prabhupada answers, a few words, daily, every moment. So when my mind is speaking about this personal exchange, it's quite amazing. You know, more than anything else, Srila Prabhupada is not like he is the closest family member that we have, or the closest head of our family. It's not just that the institution is it's the family. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have more.
Sankirtan Harinam Party sounds like it's beginning to get ready.